Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby, make it hot. Ride the cop till you hit the spot. Tell my baby, make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yo, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yo, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo.
Are we here? Oh, no. I don't know if we're here or not. I think we're here. Let's see. Talk to Mark. Are you there? Hold on. Are we having technical difficulties? I know that the Mercury is going into retrograde. Let me see here. I'm going to try to bring it up and see if I can hear us. I'm not sure we're on. Ugh, why is this constant? All right, let me see. Whoops, I can't spell. Okay. All right, we're going to try it out here. Let's see. Let's see. Naked Selma? I don't know. If anyone's out there and you can hear us, will you let me know? Oh, my goodness. All right. Let's see here. My speaker's not on. All right, clicking to listen. Okay. Let's see. Am I here? Let's see here. Okay, I am on the air because I'm listening to myself. I am on the air. I'm now telling Dr. Mark that I'm on the air. Yes, I just listened. Get on the air. All right, I'm telling him to call in again. Yeah, it's going to be one of those shows I can see. It won't hang him up. Okay, let me see what I can do. All righty. Let's see. Every week, it's something. All right. Telling me to have a nice show. That's not going to happen. Okay. It says the host is dialed in. It won't hang him up. Ugh. All right. Call back on. All right. Our number is 646-478-4847. See if it will let you in that way. Okay. All right. This should be interesting. Let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. We have a really good guest for the show tonight, if we can actually get on the air. It's that Neil Slade. He's a very interesting guy. He does something called amygdala clicking. And he has a website. It's neilslade.com if you want to check him out while we're trying to get on the air here. Okay, you hear me. All right. Are you actually on the air, though? Let's see. All right. Are you there?
Am I on this damn thing?
You are. So now you're called in as switchboard. And
I'm on the host, and I'm on the switchboard.
Okay, that's just so Mercury retrograde.
I don't care about Mercury. I'm on the earth. Play the theme song.
Oh, all right. Hold on.
Oh, God.
This is, I'm like, okay, am I on the air? Hello, hello. So I went and I had to sign online and see if I was on, and then I heard myself. I said, okay.
Tell my baby, make it hot. Ride the cop till you hit the spot. Tell my baby, make it hot.
Ooh, ooh. Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yo, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yo, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo.
That makes it somewhat better, but I'm really just not there.
Yeah, I know. No. Well, you'll have to be here anyway.
No, I don't.
You will be
here. I was perfectly happy watching the end of the Yankees losing here.
Well, that's always a good thing. Well, here, let's try this. See if this works.
I got one for you.
Good riddance.
There you go.
Ah, you interrupted it. Wait a minute. Let me do it again. Is it working? Oh, oh, it just went off my screen.
There you,
you
go.
Know? Oh, wait, let's see.
Good riddance, fuckface. So long, you fetus-faced windbag. Good luck managing a Denny's douchebag.
All right, there you go. That never gets old.
Personally, I think the guy's a phony.
There you go. Oh, there's going to be a lot of that tonight.
Oh, we are in a rank and vile mood tonight, people, so just back up.
Feeling a little saucy.
Yeah, I'm feeling a little extra special saucy. Mm-hmm. Oh, and my cat just got out right before the show. Can't find the cat. Coyotes are going to have another snack.
Serves you right for having a cat.
Well, listen, I can't always control the old pussycat.
Nothing but pain with the cat.
Uh-huh.
See that thing with the pit bull getting stuck in the guy's truck?
No.
Mm. Some guy, I don't know where it was, gets in his car and there's a pit bull that crawled up into his hood overnight and chewed through the wires. So he opens the hood, there's a dog head.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, had to get animal control there.
That's so disturbing.
Had to get animal control. Imagine a pit bull under your hood.
I don't understand how one gets under the hood.
Well, it crawled up under the car, of course.
But they're big.
With the big truck.
Oh, God.
Talking about a tiger in your tank.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
I just think it's a nice neighborhood. Pit bulls running around loose.
Well, that just looks kind of scary.
I'm all for that.
Yeah.
More
all
chaos.
Right, so tonight, as I was saying, we have Neil Slade on the air. And I'm going to have to go fetch him in a little bit.
He better click more than my amygdala, that guy.
I need a couple things clicked myself tonight. This is, you know.
I need a full brain, one of those full brain tugs, you know?
Yes,
just kind of yank the whole melon around.
That would be good.
A knock on the side of the head would be good right about now. I need to go to a bar and get punched out. That's what I need. 646-478-4847. Naked Soma, it is.
It is.
52 minutes remaining in this scintillating hour of fun and consciousness. Holy crap.
Both of us are unconscious over here.
Oh.
And I still don't understand how you're signed on as the...
No one
host
can explain it to me. Maybe the cable guys can explain it to me. Cause they seem
those
to be the
guys.
They seem to be the corner of the market on logic and reason today.
That was just unbelievable.
No, come on. If you're a monopoly, you know, I almost had to get out the John Adams quotes.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Well.
Because I just, steered our ports and sealed our blood. That's what it was like. I was talking in a British accent to most of them.
I think that's a good idea.
I don't believe you. It was just, I don't know. If you've ever dealt with the cable company or the phone company, if you pay them and you pay them more than you intended to pay them, don't expect the negotiation to go well. They will change the laws of physics in order to keep that money. Even if you tell them there is nothing there, they still keep it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
It'll be ha-ha on them come the morning.
I asked the one, are you as stupid as you are opulent? She had to put me on hold to figure that out.
Yeah, she had to get her thesaurus out.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Anyway, enough of my fabulous life.
Wait, let me just do this.
Bruce, I'm God.
Bingo! Yahtzee!
Is that your final answer?
Our survey says God!
Bing, 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 bing. Well, it was nice to meet you, God. Thank you for the Grand Canyon, and good luck with the apocalypse. Oh, and by the way, you suck!
All right.
There you go. And pre-recorded.
Just to seal
it. Yeah. Well, we've arrived at the 9:10 hour. We welcome in another human being, so why don't you call our friend out there in the hills?
Okay,
he doesn't have free long distance for some reason. He can't explain.
I'm not sure what's going on with that, but he'll explain it to us.
We'll get his policy here when he gets on the air.
All right, I am actually going to have to hang up from the show and call it back. So,
I got to play another one.
Yeah.
I'll muddle through.
Okay, try not to cry while I'm gone.
Yeah.
All right, back in a minute.
Yeah. All right. So this is probably 33rd, 34th show we've done with a guest. I don't even know. I don't keep track. But if you head over to nakedsombination.com, we've got a new directory over there of all of our fabulous interviews going all the way back to September, back. And you can join in the discussion groups over there and interact with your favorite guests. So that's something we created to kind of supplement our little hour here on Blog Talk Radio so that you sapes can get your questions answered and also submit questions for the show. You can always jump on somaspace.org, the little interface we have there with AIM, and Professor Val will take your questions, get them on the air. That's the whole point of the shoe. She's
and
back.
And we're back. Yes, we are both here, I think.
You know, I felt so alone when you were gone.
I knew you would. Neil, are you here?
I sure am.
Oh, thank God. We have had nothing but technical problems since we signed on tonight, but it happens pretty much almost every week.
We're on basically a glorified ham radio here.
Yeah, so.
So welcome. Welcome, Neil, to our little crowd.
Thanks.
Now, you've got about 8 different things here in your bio that would suggest you have
at least.
You're not declared a major yet. In life, you got you're a musical composer, you're a concert performer, you're an author, you're an artist, you wrote some books about the brain, and you do this fabulous thing called clicking the amygdala that I first came in contact with on the Coast to Coast AM show, driving home one of these late nights many moons ago.
Oh, well, yeah.
Pulled over the side of the road. Remember that show?
Did it for 10 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wild. And there was a moment of disbelief followed by a he said what kind of a thing. So why don't you give us maybe like a minute of how you came to from the music world to the brain world.
I got a degree in music education and began teaching, and I had always been doing composing and writing of music and recording. And one night I was watching our local PBS station, and I saw a very curious documentary about this guy running a brain lab up in the wilderness in the Colorado mountains at 10,000 feet in the woods. And people were describing all these weird and wonderful things that were happening to him, and it sounded pretty interesting to me. And at the end of the documentary, he says, write to me. So I did, and then I got a letter back, and he says, we'll come up and visit. And so I did, and that started a 11-year relationship with this fellow named T.D. Lingo, who ran a brain and behavior research laboratory and behavior modification laboratory for 35 years in the wilderness, and I became his apprentice. And
well, we're in New York, so what is the wilderness in Colorado slang?
Where's the wilderness? Well, it's
The wilderness begins in Jersey for us.
Colorado
was this in?
Is that where you're at, in Jersey?
We're in
New York.
Oh,
yeah,
I
but believe
sure.
me.
I'm from Lakewood, New Jersey, originally.
Okay.
How about that?
So what part of Colorado were you hiding out in?
Colorado, Denver sits up against the foothills of the Rocky Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And you go into the Rocky Mountains about 10 miles, and you start to hit wilderness. And you go about 40 miles into the Rocky Mountains, and you're really in the backwoods. And so the brain lab was about 40 miles west of Denver, between 9,000 and 11,000 feet.
Wow.
Wow.
And you would have to park your car at the end of this dirt road that was 5 miles up from this little bitty highway. You'd drive another 5 miles up the dirt road, and then you'd park, and then you'd have to walk a half a mile up this trail. Just a trail that weaved between woods and rocks. And at the end of the trail, you got to these log cabins where this fellow ran this brain laboratory, kind of like, like Thoreau might have lived, or like...
Sounds like Ted Kaczynski, ask me, a little Unabomber-esque.
You're not quite Ted Kaczynski, but
he's out in the wilderness there.
That is wilderness.
In a log cabin.
Amazing.
I spent 11 years with Lingo, learning everything he could teach me about brain and behavior science. And he had come out of the University of Chicago in his PhD program in behavioral science.
What years are these? Is this back in the glory days, or are we?
Well, he got started in the late '50s, in the mid '50s,
uh-huh.
And he ran the Brain Lab from 1957 until 1993, and
okay.
I was there from about 82 until his death in 1993. He just kind of keeled over one day.
Happens all of us eventually.
The Brain Lab, you know, just died of natural causes, and that was that.
Oh, I'm looking at the picture of the log cabin now online. Wow.
Yeah, you can see where he lived. It was kind of like a passive solar. And
wow.
Those cabins were, it's really kind of an interesting story. All the doors, you had to crouch down to get into all the cabins because his first group of students were all kids that came out of the Jefferson County Juvenile Delinquency Program that he had up there trying to rehabilitate. And so when he started building the cabins, you know, these were little kids, and they built the cabins. They helped build the cabins for little people.
Wow.
So it never occurred to him or, you know, to say, hey, you know, you need to make these door rafters a little bit higher because most humans are a little bit taller than you guys. So,
was he a short guy? Did he cope with this
well? Yeah, well, he was about 5'10", I think.
Okay.
You know.
I just have this image of him. Anyway, okay, so you're up there, you wandered up based on the PBS special, and he was doing these, was it biofeedback oriented? What was the nature of the...
No, he was really very quite eclectic, and there are pictures on the site, and you can see what the inside of the cabins look like, and they were basically... It was books. It was textbooks from the stone floors to the rafters on the roof. And, you know, students and subjects who were up there were led through a very comprehensive program that touched upon everything from meditation to really hardcore neuroanatomy, Janov, primal scream therapy, you know, really touched upon everything. So people had a really broad view of, you know, what the human brain was all about and all the different ways that one could approach changing, you know, brain and brain function and processes and things like that. So it was really, we really ran the gamut of things. The only thing that wasn't practiced up there was the Timothy Leary brand of tune on, tune in,
yeah,
and drop out kind of thing. Drugs were not kosher up at the Brain Lab. You could do them, but you couldn't do them at the Brain Lab. So.
Well, you can lick toads out there in Colorado and have fun. So, I mean, come on.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, it's easy to have fun up in the woods. And the interesting part about it was is your awareness and everything changes when you're, you know, once you've spent 7 days in the woods out of the city, things start to look different all by themselves, even if you don't do anything. So there was a sort of clarity of vision and self-perspective that was really enhanced by being, you know, out of the city and off of the electrical grid and camping out. And, you know, it was a very, very unique experience. Very different than it would have been, very different had it had occurred in some sort of cosmopolitan environment, or, you know, even in a place that had, you know, there was no running water up there. There was no electricity up there. It was really, you know, the grass, the trees, and your brain, you know, that sort of thing. So you really got a good sense of who you were without the distraction of you know, volts and watts and TV and radio and that kind of thing.
Cool. So since 93, and, this guy killed over.
Go, Colin, because it says we're not on the air. Hurry up.
Oh, my God. All right, right back.
Hold on. All right, he's got to go call back in.
Sure.
We are just having so much fun. Mercury's retrograde, so, you know, all hell breaks loose energetically. Hang on. As soon as he calls in, actually, do we have to call back in? I think we might have to call back in, too. Let me see. Oh, just shoot me. I want to go to the mountain. I want to go to the cabin, and I want to hide. What a pain in the butt. Hold on a second. And then sometimes when it says we're off the air, we're actually still on the air.
Okay.
And then we say inappropriate things.
Oh.
All right. It says we're both there.
All right.
Mark, are you there?
Am I here now?
Well, you know what? See, now this makes no sense. It said, what? I wasn't here, but we're still here. And how could we be here if there was no host?
You're looking for logic. This is Blog Talk Radio.
I'm sorry, and I tried to behave myself while we were off the air because I know. I get caught all the time.
Well, if you're confused, you're in the right place because there's no answers here.
Okay, so go ahead.
So
we're
up the mountain. It's 93. The big guy drops dead, and for the last 15 years, how has this work continued?
Well, when he died, I just sort of carried on the educational aspect of it, and I was pretty well versed in all the different therapies and methods that he used to teach people. But previous to that, in 1989, I decided to kind of reinterpret his writings. Lingo had written quite a bit, and he was a very, very prolific writer, except that he had a very kind of, sometimes his writing was a little bit hard to digest for the layman. And so in 1989, I said to Lingo, you know, I'm going to write something that's so simple a seventh grader can understand it and apply the methods that you employ here at the Brain Lab. And so I wrote a book called The Frontal Lobes Handbook in 1989. And it was really just I just kind of wrote the simplest, easiest to understand book that I could. And I sold a few hundred copies of that. And then I did Art Bell's show in 1996. And then I sold tens of thousands of copies of it. And I rewrote the book. And now people can go on Amazon.com and buy the book, and they go on my website, BrainRadar.com, and get the book. And I really doubled the length of the book and added to the, you know, I wrote four more books after that, and there's, we made a couple of films. There's a film called An Amazing Brain Adventure, you know. So I've just kind of kept adding material. The website I started developing in 1996, and that has thousands of pages on it, and it's just grown and grown and grown. And you know, I don't know how many millions of people have been to that page, but it's a huge site. I think it's number one in the Google search engine if you type in frontal lobes amygdala brain. You know, so it's a very well known and popular site. And I've continued adding material.
I got curiosity here, Neil. You guys have definitely built a grassroots audience here based on people having the experiences with you guys. But how is the scientific community down in the valley, you know, like the guys like Ledoux and the other guys that have studied fear and studied the amygdala, how have they embraced this work? Or have they even acknowledged it?
I'm not in any conflict at all with any of the scientific people because all the information that we're talking about is really based and steeped in the scientific and medical information. I mean, Lingo was really a stickler for hardcore scientific investigation. And one of the books that I've written, which is called Cosmic Conversations, half of that book is his scientific paper about the work that he did at the lab. And it goes by strict rules of writing scientific papers, you know, which I don't do myself, but that he did. I have, you know, all of the, there are points of departure from my own work, but I readily admit when I depart from the known scientific data that I say, okay, this is conjecture, this is just a fun kind of thing we're talking about. But the basic information that I touch upon in terms of frontal lobes processes, the function of the amygdala, Paul McLean's, one of the key things that I teach people and that Lingo taught people was the triune model of the human brain developed by Dr. Paul McLean.
Mm-hmm.
So there really isn't, you know, there's really no major points of contention between what I'm sharing with people in the scientific community.
We have quite a number of
hardcore professionals, you know, psychologists and, neurologists that are a part of our audience and are part of our group. people who teach in the public schools and the universities that I'm in contact with all the time. And, you know, I'm very careful not to, you know, go too far astray into the la-la land of make-believe. And, you know, I try to keep my really kind of fun, pretend stuff very separate from the serious science stuff that I
Let's take a little throw down the salad bar here, because we had Joe Dispenza from What the Bleep on a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he talked about neuroplasticity, very straight scientific stuff.
Yeah.
What would be your perception of the concepts in the bleep, like creating your own reality and the quantum stuff? Did you guys get into that?
Yeah, somewhat, but I don't know that I even go that far. I have my own personal opinion of what the bleep, you know, approach towards things.
Uh-huh.
And
well,
you want
to share? Go ahead. What's your opinion there?
Well, frankly, I didn't really care for the movie.
Yay!
You know, I really didn't. I mean, and I'm a filmmaker. I mean, I'm a great fan of Fellini. I'm a great fan of Miyazaki. And I'm very, very well versed in film. In terms of filmmaking, I thought it, I'm sorry, I just didn't think it was that great a film.
Clap on, clap off, the rapper.
You know, so it was kind of a whimsical. I thought there was a lot of generalities, and frankly, and I'll be perfectly honest, the moment I saw, what's her name? Oh, you know who I mean.
Ramtha.
Ramtha. As soon as I saw Ramtha in the film, I went, oh, no. Turns out What the Bleep was produced by, you know, that was produced by Ramtha's bank account. And
there
was
a lot of backdoor stuff with that, yeah.
Excuse me?
There was a lot of backdoor dealings between the school and
I know. I saw that. I picked up on that immediately, and I went, you know, where is Ramtha coming in as presenting herself as, you know, Jay-Z Knight, as, you know, she's putting herself in the company of physicists, and, you know, I mean, okay,
yeah.
No.
Candace Bergen
no,
with
no,
Botox.
No, you know, so.
Well, how did you handle the next wave which came through, which was The Secret?
I felt exactly the same way. Listen, I didn't even get into The Secret because I smelled that within. You know, there's a thing I call brain radar, okay? Brain radar is really a fancy word for
BS meter.
BS meter, exactly. It's also, you know, tuning into your intuition. And, you know, what is The Secret all about? The Secret says if you, you know, listen, Maxwell Maltz wrote a great book called Psycho-Cybernetics, right? Well, The Secret is nothing more than Psycho-Cybernetics regurgitated not as well.
Yeah,
you
well,
know, 40 years
gone,
later. I'm old enough
yeah.
to remember, you know, when that stuff came around the first time, and probably Maxwell Maltz wasn't even the first guy to do it.
No,
so,
he was,
you know,
the cybernetics community, that was 20 years before that, and he applied it to psychology, and then, of course, Wayne Dyer applied it to erroneous zones. And,
sure, you know, and how about Jose Silva? He did a wonderful job back in the, you know, so The Secret is just, you know, it's just the regurgitation of the idea that you think, you know, what you think you become. And I think that's a very, very, I wouldn't say dangerous, but
self-limiting, I think.
It's not true that if you just think about something enough, that becomes your reality.
That's right.
There's a lot of people who are psychotic, and they think that they can fly.
Uh-huh.
And they jump off the roof of a building and they plummet to their death. And they really
mm-hmm.
believe that they can fly.
Yep.
Mm.
Okay? So,
that's a song.
Yeah, so, you know, believing you can do something, that's part of the equation. It's not the whole equation. And a book like The Secret, you know, has people buy into or advertises this notion that
mm-hmm.
that's the whole trip. And it really, it's a very misleading oversimplification of how you get things done with your brain. You know?
Now, how do you deal with that when you're dealing with a society that doesn't pay attention to the details and they suck up these memes
mm-hmm.
and these memes get in their heads and they start making decisions based on, you know, what you're is a hollow thought. I mean, it doesn't really have a lot of meat on it, but they just go, well, that's better than what I'm dealing with. I'll just hang on to this little coping strategy.
Well, we have a term for that. We call that false transcendence.
Mm.
And it's sort of
like
you think you've achieved nirvana,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you say, oh, okay, I've got a mantra now, and if I just do this mantra, it's going to fix everything. So you do the mantra, and for 2 weeks, I see God, and I've solved all my problems. And then it works for 2 weeks, and then suddenly your heating bill comes at the end of the month, and you suddenly realize you haven't been going to work. You've just been sitting around doing your mantra, and you don't have enough money to pay your – and suddenly the bottom falls out. So not to say there's anything wrong with mantras, but again, you know, your brain is a machine that uses all kinds of tools. You've got a left brain that uses verbal, linear types of tools, and you've got a right brain that uses nonverbal, spatial types of tools. And you have intuition, and you have precognition, and then you've got this reptile part of your brain that deals with primal types of mechanics and things. And then you've got this frontal lobes that deals with abstract thoughts. So when you learn brain self-control, okay, my little word that I give, you know, stuff, you learn all of these things that your brain does. You just don't learn one little tiny slice and say that's the whole thing. You look at the whole big picture. And by keeping things balanced, then it's, you know, you have a lot of choices and you have a lot of tools. You don't try to, you know, ride a unicycle through life. You drive through on four wheels, you know, and that's how the brain, you know, it works the best. You use this tool for this job and you use this tool for this job. And you don't become over-dependent upon any one particular brain process.
Hmm. So let's delve into some examples that you would talk about how people get used to learning the system. Is it something that people go like swimming lessons, like beginning, intermediate, advanced? Or,
well, you know, it's kind of
all
like,
ships go to the same river here.
Yeah, I'd say it's kind of like, I don't know, maybe going to a candy store and going through and just kind of shopping around and saying, oh, this looks interesting, and you taste that, and you try that, and you go over to this counter and say, well, that looks good, and you try a little bit of that. There's a lot to learn about the brain. I mean, it's a continuing process that really never ends. The starting point for me is you teach, and we did this with kindergartners and first graders. I taught a brain program in the Denver Public Schools for some time. And you could teach this to first graders. And basically, you teach, I like Paul McLean's model of the human brain. And it's a very simple way of explaining to people how the human brain works. And it gives you a very broad, quick picture. And Paul McLean says the human brain is three brains in one. It's a mammal brain core, like the seeds of an apple, and that's surrounded by it's a reptile brain, okay, like the seeds of an apple, surrounded by a mammal brain core around those seeds. And then you've got the big fruity part of the apple, and that's what we call the primate brain and the frontal lobes. And so you've got reptile brain, mammal brain, primate brain. And each one of those parts of the brain do very distinct types of things. The reptile brain controls the very most rudimentary functions of the human brain. It computes what scientists jokingly call the four Fs of human behavior: feeding, fighting, fleeing, and reproduction. Those are the four Fs. Get it?
Uh-huh. Yes, we know about those.
Okay, good, all right. Uh-huh. So basically it keeps your heart going, it regulates your temperature, fight or flight, the very basic reproductive types of instincts, all right? So that's what your reptile brain computes and allows you to operate on that very same basic level as, say, a snake or a reptile. All right? Now, around that reptile brain middle, okay, which of which your spinal cord comes out of, right, there's another layer called the midbrain or the mammal brain. And what this adds on is basic social behaviors and emotions. So this allows you to additionally function on the same level as, say, a dog or a cat, right? Your pet dog has a reptile brain, and then he's got this extended mammal brain part as well. So they exist on that reptilian level, but they also can then socially interact with other dogs and cats. They can feel emotions, right? So they're operating on that additional mammal brain level. Now, when you get to higher mammals, such as apes, okay, they further develop that mammal part of the brain into what we can see in the human brain as this gray and white matter. When you look at a brain in a jar, maybe you've seen a brain in a jar at some time, or you think of Frankenstein's brain in the laboratory, you see that big wrinkly gray matter and so on. This is all primate brain. In the human brain, it makes up about 5/6 of the human brain, this additional material beyond the simple mammal brain. And the front third of your brain is what we call the frontal lobes. That's everything from your ears forward. That's what fills your forehead. And that computes abstract thought, concepts of time, cause and effect, imagination. I've made up an anagram, CICIL, CICIL, and that stands for creativity, imagination, cooperation, intuition, and logic. So the frontal lobes really compute all of those types of behaviors that we see that really distinguishes human beings from all of the other lower mammals. Okay?
So how long does it take to develop all those functions? Does it take a good part of your adolescence to get that all fired up? Or
no, excuse me?
How long does it take developmentally to have all those functions firing?
Well, you know, you develop them to a certain extent as you're growing up.
Right.
People develop their frontal lobes. The frontal lobes aren't fully grown until you reach about 22 years of age.
Yeah.
But as a child is growing up, as they're learning how to talk, as when they get to the ages 4 or 5, as a child, you start to learn
mm-hmm.
cause and effect. You start to use your imagination. We know how active kids' imaginations are.
Right.
So they're learning what abstract thought is as you're growing up. But what happens, unfortunately, as you grow older and you're subjected to our educational system.
I like the word subjected.
Excuse me?
As you're subjected to it, yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
you're subjected to mass media
uh-huh.
and television, your frontal lobes start to shut down. And you're culturally conditioned to use less of those frontal lobes processes and become more of a follower, a robot, someone who depends less on their imagination, someone who depends less
mm-hmm.
on creative thinking, right? So
you
start losing those frontal lobes processes. And so, you know, my own teacher, Lingo, became very fond of telling people that, well, you know, the human brain is 90% dormant. The frontal lobes are 90% dormant, because what happens is you just go through your daily experience and you don't use your cooperation. You don't use your intuition. You don't use your creativity, your intuition, and logic. And this failure to use these frontal lobes processes are what generates what we see as all the problems that we face in society. That's how we end up with such crummy leaders in our political system.
So Bill Cosby was right about the brain damage.
Well, it's because people are not able to perceive, you know, somebody telling the truth from somebody telling the lie because they can't add up two and two in their own brain. Their frontal lobes have become dormant. Now, so you've got this reptile brain, the mammal brain, and the frontal lobes, okay? The reptile brain is always on because if it shuts down, then you stop breathing, okay? The mammal brain is on because you're feeling a lot of emotional content. But inside the middle of the mammal brain, there's a little switch called the amygdala. And I call it the brain's master click switch. And it's about the size of the tip of your thumb. Okay. And amygdala comes from, and, you know, you mentioned Ledoux.
Yeah.
I would recommend everyone, you know, go to my site and then go to Ledoux's site because on the front page of Ledoux's site is a picture of the amygdala. And he really talks a lot about the amygdala. And what the amygdala really is, it's a little switch that either clicks, allows your electrochemical processes to flow forward into your frontal lobes, or they keep you clicked backwards into reptile brain fight or flight. And if you start to very carefully analyze or even casually examine the types of behaviors people exhibit as you look at people surrounding you at work and at school and on the street, you'll start to understand that people are clicked backwards into defensive fight or flight much of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That they're not clicking on creativity. They're not clicking on cooperation. They're not clicking on logic. Their frontal lobes are shut off. And they are, in fact, clicked backwards into reptile brain defensive fight or flight types of behaviors. Not 100%, but 90%.
Yeah, I'm trying to follow the clicking part. Is that somebody saying that that's a structural thing, or is that a biochemical thing, or is that a neurological thing, or is that just from habit?
It's all of those.
Neural nets? It's all of those things. Okay.
It's all of those things. The amygdala, you have one in the left hemisphere of your brain and one in the right hemisphere of your brain. And what the amygdala, here's an example. Let's say you're walking down a path, okay, and you're just minding your own business, and suddenly you see a snake in the middle of the path.
Mm-hmm.
What will happen is this little amygdala switch in your brain will click backwards, and so all the electrochemical processes in your brain will be short-circuit so that your reptile brain goes on full blast, and your adrenaline pumps up, and your heartbeat increases, and your breathing increases so that you can either fight that snake and beat him off or run away as fast as you can. And it shuts down. It diverts energy from from the cortical parts of your brain that serve for logical problem solving, and instead short circuit so that you just react to a threat, that you don't think about smart ways of overcoming a problem. It just allows you to get the hell out of there fast, or to fight someone. That's what fight or flight is. Okay, now
self-preservation.
Now the thing is, when you start to study the nuances of brain and behavior science, what you see is that at work, people are clicked backwards because they are clicking into self-preservation, because if they don't, they'll get fired by their boss.
Mm-hmm.
That in school, the sixth grader is clicking backwards into defensive behavior, shutting off his intelligent, rational behaviors, his ability to study and learn because of the threats that he is getting from his teacher and from the principal and from the bullies at school.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're walking downtown, your amygdala is clicked backwards because you see somebody that looks a little bit different from you and you're afraid that something is going to happen. And when you watch TV, you're clicked backwards because TV is telling you that there are these bad people from these other countries that are trying to kill you. You see what I'm saying? So very subtly, we have learned to accept this clicking of the amygdala backward into self-defense behavior, and it's diverting all of this energy from our frontal lobes that really allows us to carefully analyze and intuitively sense what is really going on, right? And it's the Who song. You know, we are getting fooled again. We're getting fooled again at work and at school and at the voting booth because we are constantly culturally conditioned to click backwards. And the beauty is, once you start studying your brain a little bit and looking at things from this perspective of Paul McLean's triune brain model of reptile brain, mammal brain, frontal lobes, you know, you start to see through this type of cultural conditioning that's happening to us and that causes this endless repetition of cultural and societal problems that we seem to face endlessly. And it's a matter of brain evolution, of society as a whole understanding how they are being manipulated into, you know, brain dormancy, as it were, rather than fulfilling 100% brain potential.
Yeah, let's see if we can wake up the blogosphere here and teach people how to click their amygdalas forward, because I know it's a physical thing you do as far as getting people to get in touch with this area. So can you give us kind of a little tidbit of a strategy of how we would start to click forward?
Oh, sure. I mean, it's very simple. I mean, the frontal lobes. Okay, what the goal here is to use more of your frontal lobes.
Yeah.
Right? Because the frontal lobes are the most advanced part of your brain. That's where all your problem solving occurs. It doesn't happen
the
in the emotional part,
not the show encephalon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't happen in the reptile brain or the mammal. It happens in your frontal lobes. That's where you add two and two, right? So your imagination happens in your frontal lobes. So if you can get your imagination going, that's a catalyst for getting energy into your frontal lobes. So it's very simple. You know, you can just close your eyes and imagine you have a feather. Okay? And imagine the feather is rainbow colored, okay? And imagine you can take the tip of that feather and you've got an amygdala. Okay, your amygdala are located 1 inch inside your left temple, and then you've got an amygdala located 1 inch inside your right temple. It's halfway between the back of your eyeball and your inner ear. That's approximately where the amygdala inside your brain. As long as you know the approximate location, that's fine.
Okay?
So imagine, close your eyes, imagine you've got a feather, and you can reach in through the front of your skull, and you can touch the tip of that feather to your right amygdala and just go tickle, 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 and tickle. Oh, and you laughed. You just clicked your amygdala forward because laughter requires frontal lobe processes. You just proved my point. All right. If you have a frontal lobotomy, you no longer laugh.
Yeah, this is true.
Okay.
I cackle all day.
Yeah. So you're click forward. So then keep your eyes closed and then reach onto the left side with that feather and just go tickle 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 on your left amygdala, and that alone will get electrochemical processes to accelerate and to open up inside your frontal lobes. So that's a really easy way. You know, you're stuck in line at the bank and you're bored waiting for the teller. Just start tickling your amygdala. You know, you're stuck in traffic. Just tickle. And what will happen is then you'll think of something else to do to sort of keep going in that direction, where instead of feeling negative emotion, you're feeling positive emotion. That's another thing. Your mammal brain is your emotional feedback thermometer. Just like you've got a thermometer on the thermostat on your wall, right? Your mammal brain, through its emotional feedback system, tells you which part of your brain is turned on. Now, if you're feeling boredom or if you're feeling negative emotions, that's telling you that you have insufficient frontal lobes processes happening. If you increase the amount of frontal lobes processes, through cooperation, imagination, creativity, intuition, and logic, you know, Cecil. If you increase those processes, then you automatically increase the amount of positive emotion that you experience. And it's very, nature is really clever because it wants you to survive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nature wants you to survive. So what it does is it encourages you to use the most advanced part of your brain, and it does it by giving you positive emotions. So whenever you use your frontal lobes, you feel good. Nature's saying, yeah, go this way. Use this part of your brain. Whenever you cooperate, it makes you feel good. Whenever you're creative, it makes you feel good. Whenever you use your logic, you feel good. Whenever you use your imagination, okay, nature will reward you with positive emotions. It's built into your brain. However, if you're not creative, if you just do the same thing over and over again habitually, if you're like a lizard sitting on a rock day after day, you get bored or you feel negative emotions. If all you do is fight with people over the same square foot of turf, you feel mm-hmm. negative emotions. Nature discourages reptilian brain insufficiency in human beings through negative emotions. It's a brilliant setup. So all you have to do is pay attention to your emotions, and it'll tell you if you're going forward into frontal lobes processes or backwards into reptile brain processes. Nature is brilliant.
Well, this is, like I said, this is like, sometimes I guess when people hear the word brain, they think complicated, they think, you know, unravelable, I can never, you know anything about this. And then when you add in processes that are mind-based, I guess you would call it, like imagination, people think of it, that it's the mind, and they have a hard time distinguishing it from this lump of pudding in their head that is the, you know, projector of the mind, so to speak. So what you're saying is that a healthy brain has both an untapped mental capacity, an untapped emotional capacity, and an untapped social capacity that if we would just engage it physically, we kind of get joker here.
We
get the jackpot.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, the first step is, you know, learn these three parts of the brain. Learn what the reptile brain does, mm-hmm. learn what the mammal, it's like catechism, you know. You have to learn a few simple rules. Well, in brain self-control, you learn the triune brain, three in one, reptile brain, mammal brain, frontal lobes, and then amygdala click switch. Learn what those do. And then there's a lot of games there are a lot of fun brain games that, you know, that just people can just go to my website and they'll get all kinds of, you know, pointers and
mm-hmm.
and games and discussions and all kinds of stuff that they can play to reinforce their own understanding of how this meat motor works, you know, how the pudding, you know, fits together. And it's really fun. It's not drudgery. You don't have to know these highly technical, unpronounceable, you know, terms for stuff. It can be, you know, and that was part of my job, you know, at the brain lab in at 89, was to make it so that a kid in fifth grade could understand, you know, what was going on underneath their, you know, in between their two ears.
Mm-hmm. Well, a couple of bridge questions here just to kind of wrap us up. A lot of stuff you're talking about with clicking back in the amygdala, in our world, that would looked at as operating from your closed identity, from sort of a primitive biological organization where you are trying to preserve what allowed you to function, that allows you to evolve. And the other part was that I wanted to get on was the new video games are coming out are more brain based, and the kids are, you know, gobbling it up.
How do you feel about that technology? I know you've spoken about other mediums, but brain-based video games. How do you feel about them as far as...
I'm not sure what you mean by brain-based. I'm a fan of certain kinds of video games.
It's Brain Age, I guess it's called, is the big thing that the kids are playing, where it actually measures, reaction time and...
Oh, you mean the Nintendo thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. It sounds like a fun thing that kids could do. The kind of video games I'm familiar with and that I enjoy are adventure puzzle games like Myst and Riven. I mean, Myst is old by now, but there have been like 6 versions of Myst. And there are a number of games that are sort of puzzle-based games where you try to work your way through the story, having to use various types of logic and clues and things like that. And I enjoyed those games. And even some of the more shoot 'em up games, I'm trying to think of one. What's a really popular one that I played recently? Half-Life, for example.
Half-Life
I really enjoyed. And it was, there's a lot of, fake blood and things like that in Half-Life. But there was actually a fair amount of puzzle solving in that too, that I enjoyed. So I'm not completely adverse to some of the one person shooter games. I think there's a place for that kind of role playing thing. I think, as in anything, you can go overboard, and moderation is a rule. If a kid is spending all his time in front of a computer, that's not going to be healthy.
Because that's one of those misconceptions about, again, the brain needs technology in order to evolve. And you're talking about an untapped technology that's within our biological resources. We don't have to go outside and rely on those things, but they can enhance, accentuate, support, and sort of bring forth some of these things that maybe, as you say, the traditional education may suppress or inflict other things that would make us go the other direction.
I think technology certainly, is going to change as time goes on. I mean, you can't object to technology because a piano is technology.
Yeah, sure.
A clarinet and a violin is technology. And I think if Bach or Mozart were alive today, they would be making use of the electronic technology that we have today in order to create music. And we can look, as a filmmaker myself, I use the video technology and the editing technology that's made available through my computer. And, it provides information, it teaches, it entertains. So I think it's very dangerous for anyone to, put down any sort of electronic or mechanical or anything as being bad or good. It's really how you apply, that piece of equipment that matters.
Well, I hate to cut you off, but we're coming up on top of the hour here. You've been a great guest. You've got a lot of information. Hopefully, like I said, we're going to put up a page for you on the Naked Soma Nation so people can continue the discussion and link into your site there at is it brainradar.com? Is that
the easiest one to remember? They can go to brainradar.com or Neil Slade. And also, incidentally, this seems a little far off base, but I have the number one page in the world on how to paint your car, of all things.
No way.
Yes. If you type in paint a car or how to paint a car or paint your car, it came about because I have an old vintage Lotus Elan, and I learned how to paint that. And then I started sharing that with people, and before you knew it, I was getting 15,000 people a day to my Lotus car painting page.
Well, we got to talk to you about getting a web audience at some point. That's another show.
Yeah.
you definitely have a magnet up there.
How about that?
Well, thanks, Dave. You've been a great guest. And
thank
else
you.
Out there.
This has been a real pleasure, and I hope we can do it again.
Yep, thanks,
yeah.
Neil.
We'll all righty, bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All righty.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm stunned.
Yeah.
I got a lot to think about. This guy gets an audience no matter what he does.
Pretty neat.
Yeah. All right, well, we got a minute to go, 45 seconds. You got a quote to take us out? Andy?
Yeah, all right. I'll have a brain quote for you. You have brains in your head. You have feet in your shoes. You can steer yourself in any direction you choose. And it's Dr. Seuss.
Hmm.
That's about where I am tonight. So.
Hmm. Well, I'll play us out here, Travel Light Through the Darkness, with a little Scotty Doesn't Know for Scotty LeDoux. See you next week. More fun
Bye-bye.
On Nick and Thelma. Bye-bye.
Scotty doesn't know that Fiona and me do it in my van every Sunday. Fiona says she's out shopping, but she's under me and I'm not stopping. Fiona's got him on the phone. Yes, trying not to moan. It's a three-way call and he knows nothing.
Joe LeDoux, but what do I know? Bye.